Welcome to another episode of the Comic Source Podcast. I'm Jace.
I'm Jaden.
This is Manny.
And we have a little bit of a different episode for you here. We have a special guest I'll introduce in a moment. But in the interest of full disclosure, I have kind of a jury rig set up. Had some unfortunate circumstances. Somebody broke in and swiped some stuff from my house a few days ago. So I have kind of not the perfect setup, but hopefully everything's going to come out okay and you can hear us. And also, I should also mention that we're recording this during the middle of the day, and usually we record later at night when my daughter and dog are asleep. So she's out in the hallway actually playing with Supergirl from the Superhero Girls line that DC recently put out, and Wonder Woman. So if you hear any noise, yelling and screaming, she's just having fun with her superhero dolls, so I'm sure you all won't mind. So, without further ado,
welcome.
We have a special guest. Say hi, special guest. Introduce yourself.
Hey, everyone. My name is V. Ken Marion. We're DC Comics. And thanks for having me on the show.
Yeah, thanks for being here. Jaden and I met V. Ken in person at San Diego Comic-Con last year, and I got an amazing Karate Kid sketch with the high collar. So awesome. And Jaden, you got Superman, right?
Yeah, it's awesome. I was waiting for somebody really good to get my Superman from, and as soon as I saw your art, I was like, oh, I got to get Superman from you.
Oh, thanks, guys. Yeah, no, I definitely remember hanging out with you guys in San Diego. It was a blast, and those sketches were so much fun to do, so I'm glad you guys like them so much.
Yeah, Manny has yet to have the pleasure, but soon, Manny, right? Hopefully?
Yeah, well, hopefully, with as many shows as we go to.
So, V. Ken, your most recent work that was released was the Journey Volume 2 series from Aspen, which we've all read and really enjoyed. And a lot of your previously published work has been with Aspen Comics. How did you get involved with them?
Aspen, I always wanted to work for them because one of my biggest influences growing up was Michael Turner. And so obviously I wanted to work for his company, you know. And I I think it was 2008 New York Comic Con. I was still in college, and I brought my portfolio around. And this is when I was like so young and not ready at all. But that was the first time I met Frank. He, of course, like tore my apart. You know, it just wasn't good enough at the time. But no, he gave me like a really good review, and I just kept going back to them year after year. And it was one of those things where we'd start to develop you know, like he knew who I was, he'd see my work progress. And it was just kind of like persistence and he constantly emailing throughout the years. And, you know, and it's in 2012, I believe, New York Comic Con 2012 is when, they were like, yeah, this stuff looks pretty good. We'd love for you to come work for us. And that's when, I started with, Fathom, the Elite Saga. It was my first project with them, which was like so cool. Cause it was like the 15-year anniversary of Fathom. And that was a book that I loved when I was a kid. So cool to be a part of it.
That must have been a really cool and rewarding moment when they finally said those words, like, yeah, you're ready.
Oh, it so was. Yeah. It was definitely like a bit surreal, you know, because it almost felt like it was never going to happen because it was year after year. And I was like, oh, it's never going to happen. But yeah, when it finally did, it was like a very, very much a moment of, whoa, this is awesome. And they had originally approached me about doing all new Soulfire, which is what they initially like had me slated for, but that was so far into the year that they're like, well, before we start that, do you want to do this Fathom project? And I was like, oh, this is awesome, it's Fathom and Soulfire, you know. So it was very surreal to get them like both kind of like lined up, yeah, one after the other like that.
Yeah, I mean, like you said, one of your heroes is Michael Turner, and those are, I mean, Aspen puts out a lot of good books these days, but not all of them are original Michael Turner concepts, but those were his two babies, kind of, so to speak.
Yeah, exactly. I just felt so like blessed to like get that opportunity to work on those two like flagship titles for them, you know?
Right, and that's good advice for our listeners out there that are artists and are trying to bring, or writers for that matter, that are trying to break in. You know, it's one thing I constantly hear creators in the industry talking about is building those relationships, especially at conventions. It's a great place to be able to meet other creators and other executives at publishing companies like DC or Aspen or Boom or whatever, you know, get out there, have examples of your work, network. It's a small industry in a way, and building relationships is a really great way to kind of get your foot in the door.
Oh, totally, totally. I mean, it's almost all of it. You know, it's like that, and the persistence is, I think, is very important too, because no one their first time out, like almost no one, you know, I mean, I'm sure there's someone, but almost no one their first time out is going to get a stellarly awesome review, you know, so it's, you have to go through that process of getting the rejection, you know, and getting better and just kind of sticking with it.
Right. And so you started with the Fathom project, like you said, and then on to Soulfire, and then finally with the Journey Volume 2 that I mentioned earlier. Do you feel like now that you've seen your books on the stands, you know, from those three titles going along, do you feel like there's been a progression of your work? You feel like you've gotten better even as you've had more and more material published?
I mean, you always hope, you know, I mean, you hope that you are that's always the goal, right? Like, is to every day you hope is you're better than the day before. So, I mean, I definitely think that I look at the Fathom stuff and I definitely see a lot of growth between that and Journey. It is also just more like the more you do it, the better you get, you know, and the more comfortable you get with it. So it's one of those things where every artist, you look at their first work to their latest work, they definitely grow and evolve. And it's more, I feel like, a subconscious thing than a conscious, like you're actively working on certain things. It's more of just a, you're just developing, like, sort of generally across the board. I mean, you always try to work on anatomy and perspective and the, like, the basics, but like things like style and like flair and just how you handle shading and rendering and all that sort of stuff is a very slow subconscious evolution, I feel.
And now, like you said, it's experience, right? Of actually doing it, meeting your deadlines and everything. The more you do it, you know, hopefully, like you said, the better you get.
Mm-hmm. Totally, totally.
And then have you had a chance to talk to, I mean, Aspen as a company, I mean, they have some of the best artists. I mean, their stuff is, their books are always just beautiful to look at. Have you had a chance to kind of pick the brain of some of the other artists that work at the company and get some pointers and tips and such?
Oh, yeah, totally. Because when I was at Aspen, I did a lot of shows with them. So I, you know, I'm pretty good friends. Like, I developed, like, good friendships with Alex Konat and Jordan Gunderson. And Paolo Pantolina is another one that, like, I talked to at the shows. Like, so it's very, like, you talk about, you know, your techniques or you're just, like, your working style about, like, oh, I wake up at this time and I work till this time. You know, like, everyone sort of has, like, their own rhythm. And it's, like, to me, it's very interesting to hear how every artist, like, deals with, like, the deadline stress and, you know, like, making sure that you get up from the board enough to, like, get some exercise and all the sort of, like, real life things and, like, how fast other artists are, how slow other artists are. It's always interesting to compare those notes with each other, you know, when you hang out at shows.
Yeah, and a lot of you, do you have more work coming up with Aspen, or you don't have anything planned necessarily?
Well, nothing planned right now. Right now, it's pretty, like, in the thick of it with this DC project that I'm working on. Yeah.
And that's with JT Kroll, who you did a lot of the work with at Aspen, right?
Yes, yeah. So every project I've worked on since Aspen has been with JT. He co-wrote Elite Saga with Vince Hernandez. I think Vince wrote the first issue and the last issue of the miniseries, and JT wrote the three issues in the middle. And then All New Soulfire was JT, and then Journey was JT. And I like, he's like such a great writer. I feel so lucky to be teamed up with him because I've been with him for like a long time now, and we just work really well together. And he just nails those character moments, and which is like some of my favorite stuff to draw is just the character interaction and the development between characters and the talking scenes between characters and getting to just push the emotions with them. And that's something he just like excels at really well. And we have like such a great working relationship that feel so lucky to still be going with him for, I don't know, like three, I think this is like third year now straight working with him, which is pretty awesome.
Wow. Now, okay, we're going to talk about your collaboration with JT in a second, but something you said there, your art is so great. It's so dynamic. You handle action scenes so well, but yet one of your favorite things to draw is the character moments. Is it just nailing those facial expressions or convey emotion? What is it about those character moments that you like so much?
Yeah, I talked to my like a lot of my other artist friends about this, which is so funny because a lot of them like they're always saying like, oh, there's so like I need more action in the books, and like obviously I love that, drawing the action. Like it's so much fun to draw like a splash page or someone punching someone else, you know. But the stuff that like I really find fun is the acting between the characters. So like the facial expressions and like the body language and how like giving each character like. I try, whether I succeed or not is up to the reader, but I try to give each character their own sort of, in a way, their own sort of posturing and their own sort of personality that comes through in the way they act on the page. And like I said, whether I'm successful or not at that is up to the reader, but that's one of the things that I like to work on the most. Like, it comes very, like, it's very fun for me.
That's cool. Yeah, let's talk a little bit about your collaboration. I recently sat down with JT at the Long Beach Comic Expo, and he sang your praises and talked about, you know, much like you said, what a great collaboration that you two have. Even to the point where before he sits down and writes the scripts, he goes over the plot and the big ideas with you and asks for your input, right?
Yeah. It's pretty cool to have that kind of relationship because before I was at Aspen, I would work with writers where I didn't even talk to them, you know, like I would just get the script from my editor and just have at it kind of thing. But with JT, it's like a very collaborative nature where he'll call me up and he'll be like, this is what I'm thinking, you know, and he'll kind of like lay the whole thing out and see if there's something that I want to push more or focus on more or less or however it would go. And usually for the most part, like he just nails it to begin with, you know, cause he's such a great writer and there's very, I mean, it's very cool to have that working relationship where we just know what the other one wants to do and bring to the table, you know, which is very cool.
Yeah. Let's talk a little bit specifically about, the Journey Volume 2. When I spoke to you at San Diego, the first issue hadn't come out yet, but we talked about how it was going to have, somewhat of a Pirates of the Dark Water feel, especially starting out with mm-hmm. the water. And man, I got to tell you that I just loved it. It exceeded my expectations. Maybe because I had that idea in my head, you know, Pirates of the Dark Water, whatever that we talked about, you know, it was a cool cartoon, but at the same time, it was a cartoon, you know, so the characters were somewhat mm-hmm. two dimensional, but I feel like you and JT mm-hmm. really further fleshed out who journey, you know, the journey that she's on and the idea that, you know, she's this half human, half genie, and the struggle of that, and expanded the world. I mean, it was just such a rich story, almost in stark contrast to something you'd see like in a kid's cartoon, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean that's all JT. Like I said, he's so great at doing the developing of the characters and pushing certain traits forward and like layering different levels onto those characters and putting them in situations where their true nature will come out, you know? And that's what I loved the most about working on Journey was I feel like Aro was a really cool character in the sense that she was like a very classic kind of hero. Like, especially in today's day and age where I feel a lot of books are just about trying to get grimmer and darker and, kind of give characters feet of clay where they're, you know, they're maybe not as idealistic as we once thought these people could be when, you know, back in the day. But I just sort of love that notion of like, this is like a very, very virtuous kind of iconic character, you know? So that was something that like, and he put her in situations where she's like a strong character or she's a strong female character, you know, like she's just a very like, iconic, noble, heroic person, and that was something that I thought was like really fun to work on.
Yeah, part of what makes her such a great character, you know, she always strives to do the right thing or what she sees as the right thing, you know, no matter what. Mm-hmm. But like I said, she has suffered tragedy. She's still, you know, she's searching for her mom. She's just found out that she's, you know, half human, half djinn. I mean, there's a lot of easily just, you know, bury your head in the sand and you know, be like, oh, woe is me, or feel sorry for herself, and she does it, you know, even with these circumstances and these trials and tribulations she's going through, she's still striving to do the right thing, even to the point where she puts aside her quest to find her mother to help others.
Yeah, totally. And that was like, and I listened to that, the interview you did with JT, and like how he was talking about her inner strength kind of thing. And that, that comes through in those certain situations. And that was totally like, she's a very relatable character in that way.
Yeah. And as far as, you say it's all JT, don't sell yourself short, because I don't know that she would come across and we would feel like we could relate to her. She'd come across the page so much unless it was you drawing, because like you said, you do enjoy those character moments. And there's one panel, actually, I'm looking at it right now, that really stands out to me. It's right in the first issue, right after they get to the big black obelisk in the sea, and it's at the bottom of the page, and she's kind of looking up at this rock, and the captain says to her, I believe you said something about having no fear, and you can just see that look of uncertainty on her face, like, oh, what have I gotten myself into? And it's just, it's character moments like that that really help make her relatable, make her, you know, like, we can see the emotion in her face. At that moment, I can look at this drawing, this piece of art, and, like, it evokes emotion. We know how she's feeling. She's got that uncertainty. Like, what have I gotten myself into? Is this what I should be doing? Is this, you know, the right thing to do? What's going to happen? And so, yeah, the writing's great, but don't sell yourself short on the art, VK.
Oh, thank you. Thank you so much. That really means a lot to hear. Thank you.
Yeah, and JT, like you mentioned, the interview that we had, he told me that he had to have that piece of art, right, with the obelisk when it first shows up. He bought that from you, the black rock.
Yes, yeah. He bought that. It was that page and the one before it where Boro's pointing out into the distance. Okay. It was like those two pages he bought, yeah. So it's like the lead up and then the rock page, yeah. It was really cool that he wanted to buy those.
Man, do you have any favorite moments in the story you want to ask VKen about?
Not necessarily ask, just the moment when I really felt like the character, who she was and how noble she was, is actually that moment on the rock when they think that the creatures had turned on them, when in fact it was one of the other pirates who had been stealing. And you know, in that moment, you would kind of feel like, hey man, you dug your own grave, you deal with what you have coming. But just the fact that she actually took the moment to make his suffering less, I thought that was very noble of her, and that's kind of where I really grabbed onto to the book and to the character.
What about you, Jason?
Yeah,
there wasn't really anything specifically. I mean, the art throughout the entire series, the entire volume, is just amazing. That your art is like some of my favorite art, and I think my favorite panels that you've done are the landscapes, like your city landscapes, like the one that when they go to like the Cloud City type place where it's the higher city, and mm-hmm. it has that huge landscape. It's just gorgeous.
Oh, thank you so much. That means so much to hear. Like, thank you for the kind of words. Like, that really does mean a lot. But yeah, that's that double page. I think you're talking about it's like a double page spread, right?
Yeah.
Oh, that took like 5 days to draw. It was a beast. So I'm glad you liked it.
Yeah, it's awesome.
One thing I've noticed, VKen, about your one of the things that I feel, I mean, your line work's great and your rendering's great, but another thing that you do that really helps keep your art interesting is your layouts are usually, you know, they're never the same from one page to the next. You know, you tend to be a little more dynamic. You know, you've got the inset panels, the panels, you'll change up the sizes. Is that something you're conscious of, or is it more of a subconscious feel? Or when you do the layouts, are you always kind of striving to keep it interesting for the reader?
That's definitely a conscious thing, because I don't know how to put this. Like, breaking in, they always said to stick to the grid with your panel layouts. And, like, I remember at college they would tell us that and everything. And yeah, editors say that too, to people, like to younger guys who are like, yeah, stick to the grid. It's really, you know, it's clear storytelling. But I always like gravitated to guys like Greg Capullo or Brett Booth or like guys that, or Kenneth Rocafort, guys that did these like crazy panel designs that, but it was still very clear with the storytelling. So I try very hard to make the panels interesting and layered and different, because I don't like to stick to a grid per se. Like, I always, even if there are no insets, even if it's just sort of panels next to each other, I still try to like kind of vary up the sizes because I feel like it's more aesthetically pleasing, but never to, but I try not to have detract from the story or the storytelling of it. So it's sort of this fine line, because if you go too crazy with it, then it just is like kind of a jumbled mess. But it's something I'm very conscious of. And when I do my layouts, some pages click right away and it's like, oh, this will work perfect. And then other pages, like, I've got 4, 5, 6 different like panel layouts before I pick the right one that seems to work. But it is something I'm, that's something I think is very important to the storytelling process, is how the panels are laid out and the amount of real estate given on each image on the page.
Yeah, I mean, you mentioned a couple of things there. No, it makes total sense. Yeah, Greg Capullo, and for my money, Brett, like you said, Brett Booth. Brett Booth has the best panel layouts. I mean, his work on Flash was just amazing. I mean, some of the ways he lay out, and like you said, totally clear, you know, which panel to read, you know, and the story would immediately flow, but they were always just so engaging and dynamic. I mean, for my money, his work on the Flash is some of the best panel layouts I've ever seen.
Oh, totally, totally. He's my favorite artist working right now. I actually own a double page spread from Flash and a single page from Flash. Like, I have him hanging, I'm looking at them right now on my wall, because like, he's like my favorite artist working right now. And his stuff, like, to my money, he's the best guy that's ever drawn the character of Flash. So it's very cool to hear you say that you like him so much too, you know?
I have about 4 or 5 pages too. And there was one, I mean, I knew it was like way out of my price range. It was at the end of the Future Flash storyline, where he did, it's a double page spread, and the panels are kind of laid out in a semicircle over the top of the page. And when I saw him at Phoenix Comic Con last year, I asked him about that. Just, you know, I was like, do you have those for sale? I mean, I'm just curious. I know they're out of my price range. He's like, no, I kept that double page for myself. Didn't even sell him, so not surprising. Let's talk a little bit about your artistic process. You mentioned a little bit about you do thumbnail layouts to kind of get an idea of what you're going to do. Where do you go from that? Is that where you start, and where do you go? Just explain your process to us.
Yeah, so I get the script from my editors, and so then I like have to. How I work is that I read the whole thing, and then I do thumbnails for the entire issue. I know some people break up in chunks or whatever, or some people work page to page literally, but like for me, it's the easiest if I can lay out the entire issue from page 1 to page 20 and then send that in and get all that approved, because it just cuts down on like kickbacks later on, kind of thing. That's more like pragmatic way of looking at it. But it also, for me, like I can see the panel layouts as a whole, so that I try not to repeat stuff up too much in terms of layouts or camera angles or, you know, all that. So like, I try not to have too much repetition within an issue. And then once I get all the layouts approved, then I just start drawing the page. And I don't lightbox. I mean, I know some guys will like blow up their layouts and lightbox them. I tried that once, and to me, I just lost a lot of energy and life with the characters. So I just kind of eyeball it from like my thumbnails to the page. Yeah, I'm very old school with it. I've worked on the Bristol paper, HB lead pencil, you know, like it's very old school.
Wow. So no digital, because I know a lot of guys are, so even some of the guys that thought they never would, just because, you know, like you don't have to light box and you can change stuff if you have the wrong perspective on a head or something that's not the right size, a hand, whatever. In fact, I was just talking to Todd Knock about that. He thought he would never go, and now he started to drift that way. You just haven't gotten there. You just like getting down and dirty still.
Yeah. You know, I mean, to me, there's personally, I feel that it's almost like irreplaceable. Like, I feel like the digital stuff, to me, you can still tell it's digital. Like, I've yet to see an artist where, like, I can't be fooled that it's not digital, you know? Like, and that's not to say it's not good or bad. I just feel like, I just like that kind of classic look, you know what I mean? And, like, I like drawing on the paper, and I like having the paper at the end of the day, you know? Like, I like having the physical art, and it's, like, I'm not saying that's good or bad. Obviously, I'm not saying one's better than the other. It's just something, this is my preference, that I like the traditional. I doubt I will ever go digital, because I like the collaboration of working with inkers too, so it's not like You know what I mean? Like, I don't know. I just, there's something about it that I just really like.
Well, that's good. That means there'll always be a V. Ken Marion original art out there for sale, which is a good thing.
Yep.
Another thing you mentioned that that I thought, okay, so we often talk about pacing within issues, you know, like when a writer goes to, you know, they have the overall plot, and before they sit down and script it, you know, write the dialogue, they'll kind of, you know, take those 20 pages and they'll pace out the story, see, you know, what story beats hit on what pages and at what point in the story. I've never heard of an artist who laid out the whole, so the whole issue, like you just mentioned. So it's almost like you're pacing your art as well while you're going through and making sure that you're not repeating yourself with layouts and stuff like that. I've never heard of someone doing that before. Is that kind of how you feel? Like you want to pace your art, and so you're, again, the story beats are hitting at the right time with the right art, with the impact that, you know, with your splash pages or larger panels and such?
Mm-hmm. Totally, totally. And I mean, sometimes the repetition like is almost necessary because of just of how, of where the impact, like say the impactful panel is like panel three on two different pages. Like sometimes you have to repeat like the, just because of like, of how dialogue balloons are going to flow and how the panel, like just sometimes there are things that work against your nature that like you kind of are, you have to like sometimes do that. But it's just, for me, it's a way to like visualize the whole thing. And it's, to me, it's also a different like thought process between penciling and the layouts. Like the layouts is way more like frontal lobe, hard thinking. Like I can't listen to music when I'm doing it. Like it's like 2 days of just like intense concentration and thinking. And then it's almost a little more less stressful than to do the pages, knowing that I don't have to every day break down the script. You know what I mean?
Right.
And I feel like I get better layouts that way too.
Cool. And you did mention, and we talked about Michael Turner as an influence. Who are some of your other influences, both as you were coming up and now that you're a working professional?
Okay, well, I mean, the biggest ones were Michael Turner and Jim Lee when I was a kid. Like, those guys just, they made me want to draw. It was Jim Lee on Hush and Michael Turner. It was his Flash covers where I first noticed him, and then I went back and got into, like, Witchblade and Fathom, and then Soulfire came out around the same time, and the Superman-Batman run he did. Like, it was just, like, he just kind of exploded, like, in my sphere of, like, of what I was, like, reading and stuff, like, right around the time when I was, like, 2004 or 5, right when I was, like, really getting into comic books, and he was doing all those covers. So they were, like, my two biggest influences when I was, like, a kid going into college. And then at college, Michael Turner kind of got even more important to me than it was even when I was in high school. Like, it was just like, this guy is awesome and he's doing everything. He's working for both companies. It was just everything about the way he was able to capture like virtue and nobility and heroic and like everything that you would want these characters to be like in their most ideal form. He was able to capture in like a single look on their face. And that was something that I thought was very like striking, and like that's the most, that is what inspired me the most by his work, and that's what I'm of his stuff the most, is what I try to bring to my stuff, was just that feeling of like hopefulness and virtue that his characters had. And then but then there were a bunch of guys though that inspired me at the time too, like Paul Pope was one who's like kind of on the exact opposite end of the spectrum of Michael Turner, right? There was like something very kinetic and motion oriented about his Batman Year 100, which was very inspiring to me. And Frank Quitely was one, Darwin Cook was one. I mean, I still love these guys, they're awesome. And but like modern guys, Mark Silvestri was another one, huge influence. Still to this day, huge influence, but like guys working now, like I said, Brett Booth, Capullo, Kenneth Rockford, like I love like that like detailed slick art, you know.
Yeah, you mentioned Paul Pope, that Batman Year 100, very visceral, I think is like the perfect word.
Totally.
And it's one of the things about Michael Turner's work that, you know, he still manages to have the clean lines, really good rendering, but he does manage to have that visceral feel. And you also mentioned virtue, and that's something that JT and I talked about. I don't know that it made it on into the interview, but we were talking about how he had a way, especially with drawing Aspen, of making her look heroic and sexy, but she still had an innocence, you know? It wasn't a gratuitous, you know? And I don't know if there's ever been anyone before or since that could have that mixture of making her look alluring, but still have that, like, innocent and heroic look.
Totally. Like I said, it was everything you'd want these characters to be. He was able to, like, bring that to them, you know? It was like, they were strong and sexy and ideal and hopeful and virtuous and noble. Like, they every character, like, had this, like, noble, like, intense look on their face. Like when he wanted to portray that, like, on the covers and stuff, where, like everyone from Aspen to Superman, you know? Like, they had this, like, just... like, you wanted to trust these people, you know, like, that look on their face. And it was something that I think that almost kind of gets overlooked in his work sometimes, because he was so good at drawing beautiful women that people don't really talk about this aspect of it that much. But that's the thing that really drew me to his stuff, was just how, like, noble all his characters were portrayed.
Right. So you grew up, you loved his work. I mean, it's beautiful to look at. I mean, just forget, you know, forget any analytical thing. I mean, it's awesome art, right? So then you go to college and you start learning about, like, the actual technique. At that point, was it when you kind of, like, he was even better than I, you know, because you look at it from the eyes of a fan and you just like it, right? But then once you start learning technique and everything, you kind of go back with a different eye, and then he, like, all of a sudden his talent, like, goes up to the next level once you realize just everything that has gone into this gorgeous artwork that he's putting out, right?
Oh, totally. And it was weird because at Pratt, because I went to Pratt Institute, and it's an art school in New York, and it's commercial art, but it's also very fine art influence as well. And I remember, like, a lot of teachers, like, they didn't necessarily revere comic book art, let's say, as much as I did, you know what I mean? And there was sort of this pushback with, like, when I was doing a lot of my projects and when I would talk about my influences to them about how, like, oh, well, why does everyone you draw have to, like, look good? Like, you should try to be drawing more of the ugly, like, draw more of the ugly. And, like, and where I understand where they're coming from, I feel like it's more like that made me like Michael Turner stuff even more, because it was like, I feel like the physical way that him drawing these characters, like, looking like good, was more about trying to show their inner goodness, you know what I mean? Like, it's not about how they physically look, it's about the virtue they have inside them. And I felt like that was, like, a way that he was able to do that, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. If that makes sense. I don't know, it's a very roundabout way. I think about this stuff a lot, so it's a very roundabout way of thinking about it. But yeah, no, but it was very mind blowing. Like, once you get to school and, like, you realize how much, I mean, and not only with him, but, like, with Jim Lee, like, with the perspective and the backgrounds and, like, all the stuff that, like, I took for granted when I was a kid, that the amount of work that goes into just drawing these, like, immersive landscapes that these guys are able to do is something that really inspired me as well. That I want to make sure I pushed that when I got the chance to work in the industry, was make the worlds feel very immersive with, like, as lush of backgrounds as I could do in the time given, you know?
Yeah, Ghibli, I mean, he's another great one. He's awesome to talk to about this. He's got some really good and funny stories about working on his stuff, you know, when he was trying to break in and coming up, and, like, you know, the expectations that his parents had for him and everything, and just how hard that he worked, because, you know, he had that work ethic that this is what he, even though it wasn't necessarily what his parents, you know, wanted him to do, he was going to do this and be successful. And in order to do that, you know, he really worked his tail off. And to the point where now, like, I was at a panel one time where, about his technique and drawing and such. And you're talking about, you know, landscapes and perspective, whatever. And now he doesn't necessarily lay out, you know, all the lines so that, you know, it gets to that vanishing point necessarily. And he kind of just freehands it. So he freehanded, like, a cityscape right there in front of all of us at the panel. And then put in the line, the perspective lines after, and sure enough, they lined, you know, it wasn't exactly 100% perfect, but I mean, it was close enough that, you know, to somebody like me, who's not, you know, a professional artist, I wouldn't have been able to tell that. I would have been like, yeah, totally line up. And so it's one of those things that, you know, that you're talking about. It's just that technique and putting in the time And I mean, these guys are, they're masters, and you know, they have these huge fan bases for a reason.
Mm-hmm. Totally.
Well, the last thing I want to talk about with you, V-Kent, is your upcoming project from DC. You mentioned again you're working with JT Krull on, and that's Bloodlines. Where are you at right now? What issue are you working on with that?
I'm working on issue 3 right now.
So you're halfway. You're halfway through.
I'm a little more than halfway through issue 3. Yeah.
Oh, is it? I thought
so.
It
was, yeah.
It's 5 issues.
Oh, no, it's 6 issues. No, I meant the issue 3 itself. I'm like a little bit more than halfway through on issue 3. But yeah, it's 6 issue miniseries. So yeah, halfway through the whole thing. It's a good way to put it. Yeah, and it's been a blast, total blast.
Yeah, I was talking to JT at Long Beach about how when I found out that you and him were doing this book over at DC, I was just over the moon excited for you. I know what a huge, you know, comic fan you are, a huge DC fan, you know, fan of all these characters, and I'm like, wow, I cannot wait until V-Kent's art and his work gets in front of more eyes, because just, you know, for good or bad, the nature of the industry, if you put Marvel or DC on a book, it sells more, generally speaking. And so I was like, wow, he's getting to do some work for the big two. I can't wait. I think, you know, you're a superstar in the making. I've said that before. Not necessarily a...
Well, thank you.
This is not necessarily a property. You know, people hear Bloodlines and they think back to the story that crossed over into the annuals that DC did way back when. And so it's not necessarily a property. You know, it's not Superman, it's not Batman. But, I mean, it's your foot in the door. And from everything that JT told me about the story, it sounds like it's going to be really exciting. It's going to make for a really good read. Not to mention the fact that, like we said, 6 issues, so it's going to be perfect for the trade. And so I have a feeling that as a whole, as a story, it's going to fit the trade perfectly. And it's, you know, with your art in it, I think it could be a big seller. And yeah, I just can't wait till it hits the stands.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, no, I'm so excited about it. And it's coming together so well. Sean Parsons is inking it. It looks great. And Andrew Dollhouse is coloring it. And I just got some of the colors back this week. It looks on issue 1. It looks so awesome. Like, I'm so beyond happy with how it's coming together and looking. And the story is a lot of fun. It's a complete, I mean, not, I don't want to say 100%, but like, it's a fairly significant departure from the original Bloodlines miniseries. Like, it's pretty much just the idea is of like these aliens coming down and infecting people and bestowing them powers, not necessarily good powers, sometimes horrific powers, you know. But it's very character heavy. It's not really superhero. It's much more of like a horror flavor to it. There's definitely a lot of action in it. There's a lot of thrills, and yeah, there's some really cool characters that I think we're developing. We have a very diverse and relatable cast of heroes that I feel everyone's going to have someone that they can see themselves in a way, I think.
So it sounds like it's right in your wheelhouse, though, as far as a lot of action, but character moments. In fact, you just posted some rough pieces onto your Twitter yesterday that JT was also talking about where, yeah, man, action, it's going to look great, beautiful art, but character-driven character moments, I mean, and that's what makes for a good story. That's what makes for drama. I mean, when you think about it, I mean, even, you know, some of your favorite movies, if it was just nothing but, you know, action scene after action scene after action scene, you know, the story suffers, and it's like, how can you relate to the characters when you don't have any idea who they actually are?
Mm-hmm. Totally. Yeah, it's when you anchor yourself to the characters as a reader, it makes the action scenes and the splash scenes that much more powerful, you know? So there's definitely, like I said, a wide variety of our main kind of group. I mean, I don't really want to call them a team per se, because they don't really have costumes. They don't really have the code names. It's very much a very kind of down to earth story in a lot of ways, you know. But our main group of heroes are, like I said, there's something for everyone. I think they'll be able to anchor on to one of them or all of them in certain ways. So they're all very likable characters, in my opinion.
Yeah, and from what JT was telling me, okay, it's like, okay, I like JT as an as a writer. I read just about everything the guy does because I think he's so great at character. Then it's your art, so I'm in, right? But let's throw that out. Throw that out. Forget about JT being on the book. Forget about you being on the book. From everything I've heard about it, it doesn't necessarily sound like a typical DC kind of book that they would do. You know, it's almost like maybe it would suit their Vertigo line better because, you know, it is a little darker. It is character driven. It's not, you know, these people in, you know, spandex costumes going out to fight to save the world. It's just the idea that they're doing something so different. I'm intrigued. You know, I can't wait to read the first issue. And then you throw JT on that, and then you're like the cherry on top. I mean, there's nothing you could say at this point to stop me from wanting to read this book.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. That really means a lot. It really, really does. And if there are people out there who really liked the Bloodlines, the original concept of Bloodlines, or there were those characters they really liked, there's going to be, we're not just scrapping everything. We're taking, the ideas of who those characters were, in terms of, I think our main character, Loose Cannon, was the original one.
Right.
Our version of Loose Cannon, he's there. You know what I mean? We have, our version of Loose Cannon in the book. You know what I mean? So there are different, we kind of cherry-picked what we liked and what we didn't like, and we just kind of were so lucky DC allowed us to do that. And hopefully fans like our take on it and our direction, and it's not throwbacky at all. So it's very much this is its own thing. You don't need to know anything about the original Bloodlines. There's Easter eggs for people that did read the original Bloodlines if they want them. You know what I mean? If they're looking for those certain characters and they want that, there's definitely going to be Easter eggs and shout outs to that. But you don't need to know anything about that to enjoy this book. This really is a truly revamped, from head to toe version of the story, you know?
But like you said, if you are a fan, there's enough from almost like an homage, you know, there's enough in there that you're going to have those moments of nostalgia if you were a fan of the original.
Totally, totally.
And the other thing that I wanted to ask you about, I don't know that you can necessarily say, but should we expect to see any DC work beyond Bloodlines? Or are you not at that point yet?
Can't talk about that.
Fair enough. Now, JT actually had this idea for kind of this homage, this revamp, or whatever you want to say, of the Bloodlines title for a while. And he had told me that he pitched it to Dan Didio. You know, he mentioned it a few times and then actually made the pitch. And Dan's like, yeah, it sounds like a good idea. And JT right away is like, but I have to get Viken to draw it. Did you know, ahead of time that he had this idea for this Bloodlines book and that he was going to try to get you to draw it before it got green?
Yeah, no. Yeah, so how he actually approached me, but I'm not sure how long he had been talking to Dan about it. Because I know he had the idea for a couple of years, so I don't know how long he had been, just throwing the idea out there. But this past summer, when we were finishing up Journey, he was like, hey, I know you're a huge DC fan and I want to keep working together. I'm like, I want to keep working together with you. This is a great working relationship. You know, it's a blast. And we, everything that I said before, we work on the same wavelength. And he said, what do you think about this Bloodlines thing? And we started talking about it. And I actually did character designs of our main five or six characters that we were talking about. And we submitted that with the pitch that he sent to Dan it was in the fall, sometime September or something around there. So I'm not sure what was happened before that, but from this summer on, I was involved in sort of the development of it and pitching. Like I said, I did the character designs for all our new ones and came up with little character tweaks and affectations for each one of them to put in those designs to, you know, make our pitch hopefully stronger. So yeah.
Cool, man. Like I said, I can't wait. Jaden, Manny, you guys have any questions for VKin?
No, I think you pretty much touched on everything. I'm really excited to see Bloodlines. I tweeted you as soon as I saw that you announced it. I was really excited to see you on DC Book.
Oh, thanks, man. Yeah, I saw that tweet. Thank you so much.
I'm a big fan of Michael Turner, Joe Weems, and seeing Journey. That artwork was just spectacular. And knowing that you're going to be on a DC book, my favorite publishing company, well, obviously because of Batman, you know, I'm just very excited to see what you're going to do in the near future with them, and just any work you're going to do in general. And obviously, I got to hunt you down for a commission now.
Thanks, man. Thank you so much.
Will you have a few minutes to hang out with us for the rest of the episode, VCAN, or do you need to get back to work?
No, definitely. I'll hang out for sure. I saw the bullet points you sent and some of the stuff. Very fun to weigh in on. So.
All right, cool.
We're sitting on top of the story of the century here.
Let's talk about a little bit of comic news. First thing I'm going to mention, there's a link in the show notes about Justice League 50 being delayed. This article's from Newsarama. So it's delayed until May, which is the same, it might even be coming out the same week of the DC Rebirth, that 80-page one-shot that Geoff Johns is writing. So this is kind of interesting. We know that Geoff Johns is leaving the Justice League to concentrate on the Rebirth work and also to oversee the whole Rebirth initiative at DC. A lot of the books are of the originals, you know, the original New 52 launches, they're going to end at issue 52. With Justice League 50 not coming out until later, I feel like we might be at the point where Justice League, their flagship title, is not going to actually make it to issue 52. It may end at issue 50. What do you guys think?
Well, I read the article, and it's kind of weird to me that it would end at 52 or even 50 or even 51. I feel like it would just it would be a kind of a shock to me, since DC has this big thing with the number 52. I feel like they would probably still release a 52, and there'd just be two Justice League books in the same month.
You know, that's a good point. Maybe whoever they're going to have to come on after Geoff Johns, you know, they could be working on it already, and have two come out just to have it hit that 52. But the thing is, if they don't, then you're going to have Justice League 51. I mean, I don't know how do you do that? You have 51 come out in June, the same month that there's already two biweekly Justice League book. You know what I'm saying? It's like 51 and 52 come out in June. Even if you do those biweekly, then you still have the biweekly, you know, Justice League Rebirth and Justice League number one. You know what I mean? That's like four Justice League books in one month. So, I mean, I don't know. It's up in the air at this point. What are your thoughts, VKen?
I have no idea. I love Justice League. Justice League and Flash are like my two books that I've been reading religiously, so I'm just excited to see how they keep going.
See how the Dark Side War ends.
Yeah. Jason Fabok has been killing it, right? Like, that book is so good.
Yeah, Manny's got us getting a sketch from him at WonderCon, and the guy doesn't do that many commissions. He doesn't open up his commission list very often because he's, you know, so busy with Justice League. So he opened it up for WonderCon, said, "I'm doing pre-con commissions." Manny immediately emailed him, texted me. I had to go to work. I didn't get a chance to email him, and I did later, but I was too late. He's like, "I already filled up." He's like, maybe I'll end up having room. And so I just sent him an email last week and asked him, "Hey, did you happen to, you know, finish the list that you had and you have room for me?" He's like, "No, I'm full." I was kicking myself, you know, because he's based in Toronto. He doesn't get out to West Coast shows very often. So, Manny.
He's a really cool dude. Like, if you guys, like, are going to hang out with him, like, he's, like, super nice guy.
Yeah, we're supposed to sit down at WonderCon for an interview, so I'm definitely looking forward to meeting him face to face. But Manny, you'll have a really great guy that I don't have. I'm finally going to be the one jealous of somebody you have.
What commission are you getting? Like, what character?
Mr. Miracle.
Oh, nice! That's awesome.
Yeah, that's my when he started his run on Dark Side War, and you first open that first page, and it's just that full page of Mr. Miracle. I was like, "Whoa, I love it!" So that's the background on my phone. And so when he said, "What character would you want, Mr. Miracle?" He's like, "Oh, whoa, oh, all right, yeah." So I'm looking forward to that. You know, it's funny about this whole Justice League thing. I had tweeted him a couple weeks ago about the splash page he did with the Justice League and the Crime Syndicate, and he said, "Thanks so much. I'm glad you love it." you know, it's, you know, pages like this, they take about a week sometimes. It's a lot of work. And, you know, that's why you get delays. And I kind of raised an eyebrow because at that point I hadn't heard about any delays. And then, here we are.
Yeah.
So,
the one thing about him not, you know, me not getting my, my email in time to get on the commission list, I was like, well, that's going to give me more time to think about who I want to get from him. Cause I there's so many characters that spring to mind. I hadn't even made up my mind or come close to even like whittling it down. So I had like a lot of time to think about it. I thought about it for a good 6 weeks. Then I think I finally had made my decision when I emailed him back. But like I said, unfortunately, he was full. I was going to get an owl man from him. That would have been really
cool. Ooh.
Yeah. So who knows? Maybe we'll hit it off at the show and he'll still squeeze me in at some point in the future. So I guess we'll see. The next bit of news, Marv Wolfman, who's the creator of the character, is going to be returning to write Cyborg with issue 10. The writer that launched the book, David Walker, is going to be leaving. So there's an article on Comic Book Resources with more details. You can find them in the show notes. For me, my thoughts, this is kind of cool. I mean, you know, Marv Wolfman is a legendary creator. Guy has been in the industry for a long time, you know, longer than I've been alive. And so to see him get to write a few issues of Cyborg before it relaunches, and for all we know, he's going to be on the title going forward after the rebirth. It's just kind of cool to see him take the threads and the storyline and the things that David Walker established and move forward, because, you know, I've sat down, I talked with David Walker, and he mentioned about trying to modernize Cyborg, how the character doesn't necessarily make sense or seem futuristic if you go back and look at the roots of the character now, just because of how far technology has come since the character was created. So it's going to be really interesting to see what Marv Wolfman does with those threads and the setting and everything that David Walker has established. Have any of you guys been reading Cyborg?
No, I haven't, but it's cool to hear Marv Wolfman being on the book, considering he's the guy who he's one of the guys that created him.
What about you? I read like two or three issues, not too many. But yeah, like Jaden said, nice to see a creator going back to his character, kind of like Wayne on Swamp Thing. That's kind of cool that they're letting and then go back to their original characters.
Are you a Marv Wolfman fan, VKan?
Yeah, I love the original Titans run, you know. Like, that stuff's awesome. So this is really cool to hear this story. I'm excited.
Yeah, excited for the big WonderCon panel at DC announcing all the creative teams coming up. That's a huge bit of news. I'm going to be there covering it. If you can't be there, if you don't live close to Southern California, or couldn't get tickets or have to work or whatever reason, you know, DC's going to be live streaming the panel with all the announcements, and then I'm sure it'll be available video on demand, probably on YouTube, on their DC All Access or DC Entertainment channels. So this is like one of the biggest things going on in comics right now, with all the speculation, who's going to be on what books. You know, everyone's being hush-hush. I've asked several creators I know, including VKan, you just heard a little while ago, if they could give any hints. And, man, everybody is being super tight-lipped, which is totally understandable. You know, I don't mind that. It's going to be really cool. Manny's going to be there. You're going to be there, right, Manny, Saturday morning?
Oh, yeah, we're going to be there.
So, yeah, if you can make it, I believe Saturday's tickets are sold out, so hopefully you already got your badge for Saturday. And if you're going, if you have a badge for Saturday, definitely go check it out. You'll be there. You'll be among some of the first to know what teams and what creative teams are going to be on what books. And also, everyone that attends the panel is going to get a limited edition Jim Lee lithograph. So are you going to be
Oh, that's sick.
Are you going to be at WonderCon, VKan?
Me? No. No, I'm cranking away here.
All right.
I'm not going to be at WonderCon this year.
All right. Well, I have to say, even though, you know, you couldn't tell us, I hope that I hear your name announced as one. Maybe if not in the first wave of Rebirth titles, maybe in the second. That would be cool to hear your name on a mainstream DC title. Also in news, over on the Marvel side of things, Civil War II details have been emerging. There's going to be a free book coming from Marvel.
called Road to Civil War. They're going to get Marvel's going to be giving that away to kind of give people an idea of if they want to pick up the book. I mean, this is Marvel's big event for the summer. I'm sure it's no coincidence that it's Civil War when we have the Captain America Civil War movie coming out. That's obviously based on the original Civil War. This is Civil War II. You know, the details we know about Civil War II. So basically, we know that S.H.I.E.L.D., even though they claim not to be, has some kind of program going on with cosmic cubes where they're changing things, taking it upon themselves to kind of police reality, which isn't necessarily on the side of the angels, morally speaking. And so we know there's a character in the book that can predict the future, apparently, with a high degree of accuracy. And so the divide becomes, okay, we know the future, we know what's going to happen, we can go and stop these events from happening before they happen. So you have these heroes that are basically taking people down that haven't technically done anything wrong yet. And there's other heroes that are on the other side saying, well, if they haven't done it yet, they haven't committed the act yet, it's not okay for you to punish them or imprison them or, you know, whatever they do. So if you've seen the movie Minority Report, it's that same argument in that movie. It's like
I was just about to say, it sounds very Minority Report-ish.
Yeah, so that's the divide. Captain Marvel, Carol Danvers is going to be on one side, She-Hulk on the other, and their respective teams. So I feel, in a way, I mean, I'm never a huge fan of doing these sequel events, and this is kind of a sequel to the first Civil War, which was very highly received, written by Mark Miller. But in a way, this is a better idea, because it's more in a gray area. It's more, you know, ambiguous. The other one was, okay, we need to register because, you know, some bad guy did something bad and the hero, you know, whatever, because of the hero, and it was indirectly responsible. And that kind of thing, it was kind of like one of them had the argument, okay, it's not okay for you to infringe on our civil liberties, you know, we put ourselves at risk for innocence every day. That was the Captain America team side, and Iron Man's argument side was, yeah, well, we disagree with you because, you know, we're just kind of dumb. You know, they didn't really have much of a lead. I mean, it was so clear-cut which side was in the right and which side was in the wrong, especially when it came to the actions they took in defense of the Superhero Registration Act. This one is much less black and white, I feel like. What do you think, Jaden?
Yeah, I think I agree with you 100%. I think that there'd be a lot more of a divide in this. Like, hearing a lot about the Civil War movie that's loosely based on the first Civil War, there's like on Twitter there's been a lot of people, oh, I'm team Captain America, oh, I'm team Iron Man, and of all my friends on Twitter, I think I've seen one person say that they were team Iron Man, and like 20 people say they're team Captain America. It just kind of seems more like it's not as gray, because most people side with Cap than Iron Man.
What are your thoughts about Civil War 2, VKan?
My initial thought was, I can't believe it's been 10 years since the first one. literally, I remember when those issues were coming out, it just feels like just yesterday, like, whoa, like, I can't believe how long it's been. But I really like the first one, so yeah, I'll definitely check this one out. I do agree that the first one was so very much like Iron Man's the villain, and this does seem much more like even, you know, so it's going to be interesting to see how it plays out, and what characters fall on what side of the argument.
Manny, there's an argument I heard recently about when you do these kind of events that pits hero against hero, everybody just comes out at the end looking bad, and your universe turns a shade darker. There's been that argument that the DC universe, that was part of the reason they did the new 52, is they just felt the universe was getting too dark. Do you think Marvel has to worry about that? Their universe turning darker and tarnishing their heroes by pitting them against each other?
No, because they'll just reboot the universe again, like they so love to do. I mean, so, I think, you know, DC did have that problem. They with going back and forth in time and then universes colliding, multiverses. Yeah, you have that problem, but you know how Marvel does it nowadays. They just flip the switch and start over again. And then you get some weird character like Totally Awesome Hulk.
Hilarious. All right, well, the last bit of comic news I'm going to mention, I got to throw props out to my boy Matt Hawkins. The new Think Tank story is coming from Hawkins and Rahsaan Ekdal, the co-creators of Think Tank. This was actually supposed to come out toward the end of last year. Then with the holidays, Matt and some of the other things going on, Matt knew that it was going to be a big delay between, I think, issue 2 and 3. So instead of putting it out, the first 2 issues, and then having the holidays come and everything involved with that and lose some momentum, they decided to hold it all till they had it all in the can and they could release all 4 issues on a monthly basis. So for those of you who are longtime listeners of the podcast, you're going to know that Think Tank is one of my favorite titles of all time. The tagline of the book is, "Reading this book will make you smarter." It's 100% true. Great value for your comic dollar, because Matt Hawkins always puts tons of extra back material in the book about how he does the research. All the science is right there on the cutting edge, and it's all real, actual things, or just maybe with slight exaggeration for the sake of the story. And so this new story, it's called Think Tank Creative Destruction, and Matt is writing about the fragility of our infrastructure as a country. As far as, you know, electricity and water supply and things like that. And I'm not even necessarily talking about technologically, you know, like, oh, somebody hacks into the, you know, power grid or whatever, they can shut down power here or there. I'm talking about, like, the actual physical infrastructure. You know, I was talking to Matt at a convention recently, and he was talking about how some of these giant transformers we have aren't produced in this country. Some of them are so outdated, they're not even made anymore. And so if someone were to destroy one to the point where it couldn't be repaired, you know, it could take months before some people would have power again. And he was also talking about some research. Somebody did some research study, some big think tank did, about, no pun intended there, about if our entire country lost power for a significant period of time, I'm talking a year or two, something like 80% of our population would probably die. Because it would affect water supply, it would affect food supply. You know, we wouldn't be able to communicate with each other. I mean, it's really, like, scary stuff. But it makes for really good stories, right? It makes for very, very good stories with a lot of drama and a lot of tension. So it comes out in a couple months. So if you haven't read Think Tank, now's the time to get caught up. Go back and read the first 2 volumes. And you'll be ready for Think Tank Creative Destruction when it comes out. In fact, if you go to the Top Cow website, I believe they have the first issue of Think Tank for free, and I think maybe the first 4. And in fact, they just recently, within the last month or so, Top Cow released 50 books on their website for free. So they're a great company. They put out a lot of quality stories. I know Top Cow has kind of this reputation back from the 90s of being the company that puts out these bad girl books. That's not who they are. They really put out some great quality books with really good storytelling, high quality art. And in fact, there's a few Top Cow titles I'd love to see you on, V-Ken. I'd love to see you take on some Artifact Universe characters and see how you render them on the page. So really excited about Think Tank, and I know Manny and Jaden, I know you guys are too.
Yep, I can't wait. I'm really curious to see how it is with the color.
Oh, that's right. This one's going to be in color. I forgot to mention that.
Yeah, it's going to be a little bit different.
Yeah, Matt Hawkins is awesome. Like, I really like his stuff on Think Tank, and it's really, like you said, interesting stuff, you know? It's, like, really cool. And I would kill to draw Cyberforce.
Oh, I'd love to see you on Cyberforce. That'd be... I'm going to talk next time I see Mark. I'm going to mention it to him. The one thing I worry about with this book, and I told this to Matt, I'm like, man, you're giving people ideas how to take out all the electricity in the United States. It's like a how-to manual.
Oh no. I mean, the way he's written a couple of his books lately, Wildfire, The Tide, first arc of Think Tank, and even Symmetry to some degree. I really think it's more of a, hey guys, open your eyes. We're living in a society where we really think we're safe and nothing really can go wrong, but he tweaks certain things where certain people, a group can think in a certain way and your whole society falls. Just look at how easily it was in Wildfire with GMOs, and we see that now in society, or even with the tithe. If a group really wanted to start, you know, race wars or even religion wars, it's not that hard to do. And, you know, it's just a shame that not more people are reading these titles.
Well, we know the FBI is paying attention because they've talked about it a few times about some of the ideas he's put in his books, which I've talked about on the podcast before. So,
my name is Oliver Queen. To save my city, I had to become the Green Arrow.
Malcolm Merlyn, you have failed this city.
Mr. McGee, don't make me angry. You wouldn't like me when I'm angry.
My name is Barry Allen, and I am the fastest man alive. I am the Flash.
One thing I forgot to mention when my laptop was stolen, I lost all the sound effects, all the bumpers, our intro music, everything. So I scrambled, stayed up most of the night, putting together some new bumpers. How'd you guys like that new TV bumper?
I like the, is that the old Incredible Hulk?
Yeah, don't make me angry. Everybody knows that line, right? So pretty cool. A couple TV news items. CW has renewed, well, they announced 11 shows, being renewed, but the comic shows among them. So that's Arrow, Flash, iZombie, Legends of Tomorrow, which we speculated, in fact, Jaden was talking about before it debuted, about how we didn't necessarily think it would get a second season just because it's so expensive to produce. But that got renewed as well. So ratings-wise this season, those comic shows are the top, like all of them, are the top shows on the CW. So what do you think, Jaden, about them all being renewed, including Legends of Tomorrow?
Well, Legends of Tomorrow really surprised me when I saw it was going to get renewed, because I remember before it even came out that they were saying that they probably weren't going to make a second season just because of how expensive it was. And I thought that was just like they had that in mind and that they weren't even really planning on it. But it was really surprising to me to see that the second season was renewed. I liked this last episode, this last week's episode, a bit more than I have previous episodes. I thought it dealt with a lot of good, like issues that are still present to today. And it seems like it's just week to week, it's hit or miss for me if I like the episode or not. But, I'm happy that to see the other two, renewed. I mean, I love Flash, I love Arrow, and, I'm hoping that they still continue to do good work.
Yeah, you're not watching iZombie, though, right?
No.
What about you, Manny? Are you watching iZombie?
No, I tried to watch an episode or two, but just really haven't had the time to get into it. I mean, with as many shows, as comic book shows there are during the week now, yeah, something we've got to get cut.
How do you feel about renewing Legends of Tomorrow?
I watch it week to week, kind of like hoping it really starts gaining some steam. So maybe it's just because I love the era of the 50s. Like, I kind of thought it was pretty cool. I kind of liked it, but more than anything else, it's the characters I really love. Leonard Snart, Caitlin, and even Ray Palmer and things like that. So I watch it kind of hoping that the storylines get a little bit better, but I also understand that you're dealing with a lot of different personalities. So in a 1 hour span, it's kind of hard to get them all in or to really get them going. But hey, if people are watching it, you know, hopefully it can get a little bit better.
Yeah, it's interesting it'll be interesting, I think, to see what they do for the second season. I mean, like you said, it's hard to squeeze all these characters into just an hour show. So, I mean, is next season still going to... Are they going to... I mean, I assume because, you know, and I even talked to Mark Guggenheim about this, they didn't know if they were going to get a second season. So I'm assuming that the whole storyline with Vandal Savage is going to be concluded in this season. But at the same time, maybe they wrote a back door so that if they did get renewed, I know television shows do that sometimes, so it could be that Vandal Savage is the villain, going forward, find some way to escape, or will it be not a time travel story? I mean, the title, Legends of Tomorrow, it could be just about anything, so it'll be interesting to see if they stick with the time travel thing, if it's a lot of these same characters, if it's a different team. I wouldn't expect it to be an all different team, just because some of these characters have gotten a following to this point, and also that will help reduce some of those high production values, if they don't have to come up with, brand new costume. I mean, didn't that that Adam costume cost something like $25,000 to make or something ridiculous like that?
Yeah, I think it was somewhere around there, like cost of a car.
Have you been watching Legends of Tomorrow, Beacon?
No, I actually have not. I'm actually completely behind on Arrow as well. And Flash, I'm all caught up on. Like, that show's my jam. Like, he's my favorite character, so I watch that every week. But I've just been, I have been kind of strapped for time, but I'm definitely going to catch them all when they get on Netflix. I'm going to binge them all. And I'm so happy that they all got renewed, too, because the CW's just, they're killing it with the DC shows,
Yeah, and then Netflix has the Marvel shows, and our other bit of TV news this week, the Luke Cage series got a release date, September 30th. They say it's a premiere date, but really it's a release date, right? Because Netflix, they dump all the entire season of these shows at the same time. So it'll be interesting. I mean, they started with Daredevil, which is much more of a known household name. And so I kind of expected that to do well. I wasn't so sure how Jessica Jones was going to be received, just because it is such a lesser-known property. And it did well, and I heard a lot of people critically saying that it was actually a better show, better story, better characterization than Daredevil, after Daredevil had been hugely popular. So I think that Netflix has a lot of trust at this point from Marvel fans and Marvel zombies. So I expect this Luke Cage series to be good, but it'll be interesting to see if... I mean, so where will it fall? Will it be better than Daredevil, better than Jessica Jones? Will it be in the middle? Will it be the worst one of the three? Because like I said, Netflix has a lot of trust at this point, but how comic fans are and fanboys, it doesn't take much to set them off and get them trolling on the internet. So I guess we'll see. I know we're a big fan of both Daredevil and Jessica Jones, Jaden. And Luke Cage, actually, the character and the actor appeared in Jessica Jones. So are you excited for this? Are you looking forward to seeing more of Luke Cage?
Yeah, I'm really excited for this. You saw quite a bit of him in Jessica Jones. I would say that he was probably in half or a little less than half of the episodes for a decent amount of time. And I think that was just them testing the waters to try to get people interested in Luke Cage, more so because a lot of people knew the actress who played Jessica Jones from Breaking Bad and a few other shows. So I felt like that was one of the main reasons that a lot of people got into that, but then they realized that it was actually a really good show.
Yeah, what's her name?
I feel like
Ritter, right? What's her name? Ritter is her name?
Yeah, Kristen Ritter.
Kristen, that's it. Yeah.
Yeah, and I'm really looking forward to this. I think that the actor who played him in Jessica Jones is really a perfect cast, and I don't know. They've done really, really good with all of their Marvel shows on Netflix, so I expect this to be the same.
Yeah, Mike Coulter is his name. I don't know that I've ever seen him in anything other than Jessica Jones. Have you had a chance to watch the Netflix Marvel shows, VK?
Yeah, those are awesome. Like, I actually just started watching Daredevil again last night because my girlfriend had never seen it, so we just started watching it. But those shows are so good. Like, how realistic they take it, and he was awesome in Jessica Jones. Luke Cage was awesome in Jessica Jones. Mm-hmm. So I'm very excited about this. And what I'm even more excited for is Iron Fist is my favorite Marvel character of all of them. Right? Like, he's so obscure, and the fact that he's probably going to be in it, I'm very excited about too, because I love the Luke Cage Iron Fist team. Such a cool concept, buddy cop kind of idea.
Yeah,
and I'm glad that they cast who they cast for Iron Fist. I think it's a good choice, and they didn't fall into the, you know, kind of cave to the pressure. There was a lot of people online speculating that, you know, they should diversify and make him an Asian American, which I don't necessarily have a problem with that. You know, it always bothers me a little when they change something from the comic just because I'm such a purist. But part of what makes Iron Fist who he is the fact that he was, that wasn't his background. You know what I mean? Like, he wasn't Asian. He was kind of, you know, fish out of water. He stood out from everybody else, you know, in Kunlun and when, in his training and stuff. And that's what kind of makes him the character he is. That he's not, you know, he's not that trope, you know. He's not some Asian guy that knows martial arts. You know, he's a white guy, but yet he's still, you know, this living weapon. And it's that's kind of cool that it's, you know, it throws a curveball in there. It doesn't make it something that's expected. You have any thoughts on Luke Cage, Manny?
You know, when Jessica Jones started, I really had no real interest in it either, but it turned out to be such a great show. Luke Cage's character, not really a big fan of anyway, but I will tell you this, my wife isn't necessarily big on superhero shows, and I mean, sometimes she sits down and watches them with me just because, you know, that's what we're doing, that's what I'm doing that night. But so far, Daredevil, Jessica Jones, she has binge-watched them with me and we've been able to have conversations about them regularly when they were on. So, I mean, they must be doing something right in order to get, you know, that many people interested, even people who aren't necessarily into comic book characters. So, yeah, and in a way, I'm very curious. I guess that's the way to put it.
Yeah, I mean, it's one thing about these shows, and something Mark Guggenheim and I talked about at Long Beach in September, about how in order to make these shows good, you can't think of it in terms of, I need to make a good comic book show. It just needs to be a good show. It needs to be well acted, and the production values need to be good, and the directing needs to be good, the writing needs to be good. Make it a good show, and then if it so happens that the show is about characters that appear in comic books, then that's great, you know? And it would be even more great if we could turn some of these people that are watching comic book movies and comic book TV shows into comic book readers. But that's a whole discussion for another day, so.
That's why I'm here. We need to be put in check.
Whatever form that takes, I'm game.
Sorry, Tony.
If I see a situation pointed south, I can't ignore it.
This doesn't have to end in a fight, Tony.
You just started a war.
Hey, everyone.
So the Civil War, the Captain America Civil War, the second trailer came out this last week. And I love just right at the end, you get that little, hey, everyone, from Spy. I mean, it's so, the tension is ratcheted up. And then Spider-Man shows up, right? And it's kind of like, hey, everybody. I loved it. It was cool. And, of course, it's our movie news for this week, the Captain America Civil War 2 trailer. Let's start with you, V-Ken. What did you think about the trailer?
Oh, I loved it. Like, from the jump, all the characters look awesome. Like, Bucky looks awesome, Falcon looks awesome, Black Panther looks awesome, Cap looks awesome. Like, they all just, like, look so cool, like, in the drama that they're rashing up. And I can't wait to see what they do with Black Panther, because when they announced him in the movie, that was, like, he looks sick, you know? But, no, but seeing Spider-Man at the end, that just, like, made my week. Like, just because that costume looks so good, and, like, the eyes animating, like, I was very happy to see it all coming together.
Yeah, the whole animation of the eyes, you know, we saw that in Deadpool, and I thought it worked really well. But this week, it threatened to break the internet in half, with half the people thinking it was cool, and the other half of the people being like, well, this doesn't make sense that his costume would move, and I didn't like it, and blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, the guy is a human spider. What about this is supposed to make sense? You can believe that the god of thunder walks around on the earth, but you can't believe that the costume of the eyes would get bigger. Like, what are you doing? What are you talking about? Ridiculous. What were your thoughts?
I just think it's like a cool, different take, you know? Like, I love the Andrew Garfield ones, like the very homemade kind of like approach to it. Cause he's like very kind of like street level, kind of like, I made this like with a, like, roll, like, a paint roller and, like, basketball, like, netting and stuff. Like, I thought that was very cool, but then it's just, like, cool to see, like, a different take on it, you know? I'm very excited.
Yeah, and the thing is, this is Marvel's take, you know, because all those other previous Spider-Man movies came out from Sony. As we know, Marvel doesn't have the rights, but now they've entered this agreement after the last Spider-Man movie with Andrew Garfield didn't perform up to Sony's expectations. So now they've got this agreement. So now we're finally going to get to see the character that you could argue is the most important Marvel character, the flagship of their publishing group, Spider-Man, done the way that they would do them. You know, this movie studio, Marvel Studios, who's had, you know, just unprecedented success bringing comic book characters to the big screen. So for that reason, I'm excited, and I'm okay with whatever they do. What do you think, Jaden?
Well, I watched this trailer, and I've been excited about Captain America: Civil War since they announced it, because Winter Soldier is probably my favorite, if not my second favorite, Marvel movie that they've put out. I just thought it was great, and hearing that they have the same brothers working on this movie that they did on that previous movie, it just had me excited from the get go. And I mean, these trailers just made, like, the first trailer I wasn't too high on, but this trailer just really, it's awesome. And I'm kind of scared that people are going to be expecting a lot more Spider-Man than we're probably going to get, considering I think he got cast like two-thirds or three-quarters of the way through shooting. But I am excited. He did look cool. I like that it's going to be a different take, more of a younger Spider-Man. I can't wait. I'm more excited for this than Batman v Superman.
What if that's all the Spider-Man we get, that little bit we see in the trailer? Like, so he, you know, Iron Man yells under ruse, he steals Cap's shield, he lands on top of the car, hey everyone, and then the credits roll. And you gotta wait for Captain America Civil War Part 2 to see any more Spider-Man. People would go crazy.
Yeah, I don't think that would do that. I think he's gonna have at least, like, a little bit of a role, if not, like, just do a little bit of something. I don't think they would do that to us.
I don't know. A lot of people didn't think they would have a Star Wars movie without Luke Skywalker, but we pretty much did.
That's true, but I mean, Civil War, I don't know that they're going to make a Civil War 2. I'm pretty sure they're just going to try to finish it in this movie, so I think that we're going to get a little closure.
All right, Manny, you heard what he said right there, right? He's more excited for Captain America Civil War than Batman versus Superman. Those are fighting words, aren't they?
A little bit, yeah, for me at least. I'm split two ways for this, because in one way, I love Paul Rudd's Ant-Man, and I don't like Paul Rudd, but I like his Ant-Man. And then, I'm very excited to see, Spider-Man back. And then also, I mean, the characters themselves, like, you guys were talking about Black Panther also, like, I cannot wait to see him. But, I mean, I found it kind of funny when he says, you just started a war. And then one of the next scenes is kind of them running at each other. But it's like 5-on-5. I was like, can you at least add some soldiers or something to make it really look like a war or something? It was kind of funny to see that scene, because they kind of panned out, and it's like it's an empty field, and it's just them going at it. So, I don't know. Maybe I wouldn't have had a problem if they would have named it something else. But the fact that they called it the Civil War, and then you just have, you know, those few heroes fighting each other, I find it kind of funny.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
I was going to say, I can see your point. I mean, it's kind of hard, you know. I mean, they want to pay homage to the original Civil War series. But one of the big complaints we've heard about superhero movies, we heard it about the last Amazing Spider-Man movie, we've heard people worrying about it as it pertains to Batman versus Superman, is trying to put too many characters in. Because a lot of the people that go to see these movies, they don't know who the characters are. So you try to shoehorn too many characters in, and you've got to give enough background so that the audience, the people that aren't familiar with them, know who they are. So it makes it tough. Certainly in the Civil War comic book, you know, people knew who the characters were, and there, you know, it was a huge cast, and it made sense to call it Civil War in a way that doesn't necessarily make sense in the movie. But I mean, how many characters can you really, you know, throw in there? So, you know, they're kind of in a tough spot, but I do take your point. But another thing I wanted to ask you about, Manny, was, so I know one of your biggest complaints about Marvel movies so far has been the villains. They're almost, you know, like super freak of the week. They haven't been fleshed out very well, very, you know, mustache twirling, two-dimensional. So now we don't really have villains per se because we have hero on hero. And these characters certainly have been fleshed out a lot more than any of the Marvel villains in any of the movies so far. So I think in a way that would make you happy, right? That the, I mean, I don't know who you'd call the protagonist and who you'd call the antagonist in this situation, but at least all the people fight, there's no two-dimensional characters, right? Because they're all like fleshed out and done well. So I would think that you'd be happy about that.
Oh, definitely. Actually, this trailer was really good compared to the last, in that sense, because you kind of get Iron Man's perspective a little bit more. And once you see what happens, you know, War Machine being shot down and some of Captain America's points, I was kind of torn. I was like, oh, well, you know what? Maybe I don't agree with Captain America. Maybe, you know, really got me thinking in that aspect. I really like it because, they have a point. That's a lot of destruction in a few years, all because of, well, I mean, you can kind of blame SHIELD on the government too, but, yeah, so, yeah, I'm glad that they don't have, that they didn't destroy another character, kind of like they did Ultron. And the real only successful character I felt that they've done was Loki. I thought he was amazing. But yeah, with Civil War, I'm kind of, it's gonna be better villain wise because there is no villain and you really have to pick who you feel is right.
Yeah, but it still doesn't approach the level of anticipation that Batman versus Superman does for you, right?
Oh no, I can't wait. That's only a few days away.
Yeah, so you get to go see it on Monday.
Yeah, I do. one quick question I have for you. Did you guys see the LexCorp viral site that went up?
Yeah, I did. I wasted a good 10 minutes on there. Did you go?
Do you guys think that hints at the next villain or maybe a plot line?
You know what? I didn't even think about that. But now that you mention it, it could. It could. For those of you that aren't aware, I'm not going to spoil it here. Just go Google LexCorp OS and go check out the website for yourself. It's got some games on there and some other content coming, apparently, according to the website. We were going to have a quiz this episode as well, continuing our new 52 creator quiz. But when I went to type up the quiz, I realized that all the info for the questions that I previously asked were on my laptop that was taken. So I didn't want to repeat. So I'm going to have to go back through the episodes where I've quizzed Jaden on the new 52 creator teams and reconstruct the list so that I'm not repeating myself. So apologize for that. So that's going to do it for this episode. First of all, we want to thank VKen for joining us. Super talented artist. I hope that you guys all go and check out Journey, that recently concluded, with Aspen, and, put in your orders now with your local comic shops, pre-order Bloodlines. And VKen, if people are interested in, following you or following your work, what's the best way to get in touch with you or to find out, you know, what conventions you're going to be at and all that kind of stuff?
My Twitter handle is @VKMarion. I'm also on Instagram, VKenMarion, I think. And I'm on Facebook, VKenMarion. Hit me up on any of those. And yeah, I'm very approachable. Just message me. I'll message you back. I've got like a kind of a, sometimes it takes me a little while to message back just because like I'm really busy. But just, yeah, no, I see everything. So. Yeah, on all those sites.
And what about...
And thank you so much...
Wait, oh, go ahead.
What were you saying?
No, go ahead.
No, what were you saying?
I was going to say, what conventions are you going to be doing this convention season?
The only one I have for sure right now is New York Comic Con. Just because, like, I don't really know, like, with my deadline situation, Like, I'm kind of taking it a little easier this year with cons because I kind of hit it hard last year. So I'm taking a little bit of a easing back to the cons. But I'm going to be at New York for sure, and then at the Twin Tiers Con. It's a con in upstate New York in Elmira, I believe, is the city. Yeah, so if you're in upstate New York, stop by and hang out.
Oh, I was really hoping you were going to be at San Diego again this year so I could say hi.
Oh, I would love to go to San Diego this year, but I don't know if it's going to be able to work out with my schedule, this thing, so...
Fair enough. I know San Diego is a huge undertaking, especially for a creator like you that's all the way across on the other side of the country. You know, it takes... And it's so long and exhausting, and, I mean... So you lose the week of the convention, and then you lose another 2 or 3 days, at least, of recovery time.
Oh, yeah, yeah. That was the first time I ever went last year. It was quite an experience. It was awesome.
Once again, we want to thank VKen for joining us, and if you want to contact us here at The Comic Source, just go to our website, thecomicsourceblog.com. You can click on the Contact Us link. You can also check out Manny's written blog there. You can check out my written blog, which I just recently started a new project. It's going to take me a little while to get it up and running. I lost a lot of the articles that I had written for it, again, because my laptop was taken. But it's going to be a little brief history on the comic industry and comics as an art form, and also where I think the industry and the medium as an art form is going in the future. So keep your eyes out for that. Also on our website, you can check out videos of our YouTube channel. You can check out our sketch gallery. You can leave comments on any of the podcast individual pages. If you want to email us directly, the email address is thecomicsourceblog@gmail.com. We're also on the Twitter, twitter.com/thecomicsource. That's a great way to find out when new episodes are going up, when we're going to be at conventions, what we're going to be doing. You can eavesdrop on conversations I have with comic creators. Also, we're on Facebook. Just do a search for The Comic Source. That's us. And I think that's going to do it. Thank you all for listening. Again, I apologize if the sound quality wasn't up to our usual snuff. Have a new laptop ordered and on the way. So next episode we should be back up and running. Reconstruct some bumpers, get that quiz stuff all squared away, and we'll have a quiz for you next time. So thanks for joining us, everybody, and final thank you to VKen. Great having you, man.
Thank you so much for having me. Really appreciate it.
All right, everybody.
Yeah, it was a pleasure, man.
We'll talk to you next time.
Yeah, it's nice to talk to you. Hopefully I'll get to meet you soon.
Yeah, definitely.